Now, let me start by saying that we're going to be continuing to look at the book of James. And if you haven't already done so, please sign up for the talk on James that Paul, stand up Paul just so they know, Paul has prepared a super little talk that's an introduction to the man and the letter that he wrote. Now, I can't see Josh here, and I know he's not here, is he, this morning? If you're not, even if you're not a member of the church and you'd like to hear what Paul has created, please see either me or Peter or Martin and Jill who are up here or something. Give us your email address and we'll get the talk to you. You'll learn an awful lot more than about James than you can possibly learn this morning. It's really good stuff. Right. Imagine this man, James. He's aged 5 and his education starts. He trots along in his smart new shirts and his new school bag, and he goes to the local synagogue. And the teacher there says, right, open your manuscript or whatever it was. And let's see if I can find. Hold on a second. Here we go. Oh, I thought I got this so well arranged. Open your manuscript. Wait for it. At Leviticus. Yeah. Those of you who've read your Bibles or attempted to do so will be sympathizing with the little James straight away. Let me read you the opening words, almost the opening words. Ready? If his offering is a burnt sacrifice of the herd, let him offer a male without blemish. He shall offer it of his own free will at the door of the temple of meeting of the Lord. Then he shall put his hand on the head of the burnt offering, and it will be accepted on his behalf to make atonement for him, etc., 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 with another 30 chapters of this stuff. And James must have wondered what had hit him. And in fact, you know, if that had been any of you parents today, you'd have ended up at the school next day saying, what are you doing trying to teach my kid to read by Leviticus? How unreasonable can you get? But this was James's diet. And I'll tell you what, I'm jealous. This is the book in which there are recorded more direct words of God than any other. And there's a lot more beside that you might learn from Paul's talks. So yeah, I'm really jealous. And then you picture this boy, try to get hold of this. He's growing up at home, and he's got an elder brother, well, strictly half-brother. And one day, mum or dad says to him, James, I think you ought to know that your dad is not the dad of Jesus. What? What? Hang on. I didn't think that sort of thing happened in Jewish circles, mum and dad. Well, this is somewhat unique, James. You see, James, Jesus' dad is God himself. Sorry? Pardon? Yeah, really? Let me tell you more about his birth. And I've often wondered how that was. His own parents telling James all that we know as Christmas. And he must have sat there open mouths, and he must have gone to his other brothers and sisters. Have you heard this? Have they told you yet? Oh, yeah, they haven't told Santa and Santa yet. He's got it all to come. How did you cope? I don't know. How do you cope with news like that? This brother of yours is, my goodness, he's something special. And you can't see it. You can't get hold of it. In fact, it must have been downright awkward at times. And then you hear that mum and dad have taken him off to Jerusalem, age 12, because 12 is when they first went for this special ceremony. And he went and stayed there, chatting to all these learned people and not only holding his own, but getting the better of them. And mum and dad come back and say, oh yeah, we lost him for a while, and we found him in the temple, chatting to all the learned people. What? My brother? Yeah, this brother of yours. Oh boy. And then age 30, this brother of yours, instead of staying at home and looking after almost certainly his widowed mum, instead of doing that, as he should have done as a good Jewish boy, he goes off and starts an itinerant ministry. And you think, hey, hang on, what, we think you should be looking after mum. Sorry, I've got a greater work to do. Yeah, blow this. And James absolutely, despite what all that he must have heard and all that he must have seen, he doesn't cotton on to whom his brother really is. Just can't grasp it. Until something undeniable happened. It's called the resurrection. And suddenly, James could see. And James turns to Leviticus chapter 1 and he says, if this offering is a burnt sacrifice of the herd, yeah, he was just like me, but not quite like me. Let him offer a male, yeah, that's my brother, without blemish, yeah, that's my brother. He shall offer it of his own free will. Yeah, that's what my brother did. He just gave himself. And so on. And James would have had a whole new outlook. And in fact, he went on to become effectively the leader of the Jewish church in Jerusalem, and hence held in immense respect by the Jewish community, Christian community worldwide. So, James comes to his Bible day by day. And, let's get Anne to read to you at this point. Where, there she is. Our little passage that tells us something, I hope you'll find with me, a wonderful something about the way James dealt with the Bible from the point of his Christianity onwards. Okay. Oh, sorry, it's a bit...
it's a bit high. I feel sorry. Like the Queen, you know. But be doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving yourselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man observing his natural face in a mirror. For he observes himself, goes away, and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it, and is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this one will be blessed in what he does.
Thank you, Anne. So, I hope this morning I can get you to a point where you feel blessed in what I'm going to ask you to do in the coming week. I'm actually going to set you homework. How about that? You can do it either individually or you can do it in your house group. But first of all, now James has discovered that this textbook that he read all through his early years, his teenage years, and knew so well in the family circle, has become the perfect law of liberty. Perfect because he saw it lived out by his big brother. That's how he knew it was perfect. Liberty, because he saw his brother live a life of love. There is no law against love. You have loved too much, said the judge. Okay, I'll take that, says the guilty party. What's wrong with that? Nothing, says the judge. Can't judge that, can you? A life lived out in love. And it provides for forgiveness. Yes, we all sin, but the law says, if you've sinned, here's the remedy. And of course, Jesus provided the ultimate remedy by dying in our place. So, James, all through his learning period, he learned to read at the synagogue, he learned to listen to the speakers, he learned to memorize. I'm sure he did a lot of memorizing by rote, and I'm sure some of it just seeped in there like John 3:16 for Christians. You don't know when you learned it, but you jolly well did. And he learned to study. But I want to suggest to you this morning that he did something else as well. Not just reading, not just listening, not just memorizing, not just studying. And he starts by telling us about this silly guy who comes along and he comes across a mirror. And he takes a look. Ah, yeah, okay. What do I see there? Quite a handsome critter, really, but yeah, a bit angry at times. Well, I was hurt a lot when I was a kid, so I tend to take that out on other people, you know. But not bad. And puts the mirror down and off he goes, and nothing changes. He's looked in the mirror, and all right, there were a few things could do with correcting, but nothing's going to change. He simply didn't look deep enough. What he could have learned, he's completely forgotten. And James goes on to say, there's another way to look at the Bible. And I'll tell you how I know that. Let's go to the book and reread what Anne has just read to us just one little bit. He who looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it, blah-de-blah. He who looks into the perfect law of liberty, looks into, and he who continues in it. And you know, both of those expressions are completely unique in the New Testament. James is trying to tell us something. Look into it and carry on looking into it. And that verb, look into, is very strong. A couple of years ago, invested in a little program that I've got on my phone here called Picture This. So if I see a nice flower or whatever, when I'm out and about for a walk, I can take a photo, press a button, and it'll come back and tell me what it is. I've never been interested in the plants up to now, but it's been fascinating. And this word, look into, is as if you were on a country walk and you see a tiny, tiny flower in the grass. So you bend down, and maybe in my case, you think, do I know that? Or have I already got that one recorded? No, I don't think I have. You take a picture, you can read about it, and you think, now, what time of year are we? What else might I expect to see in the way of insects? Because I've now seen this plant. How long is it going to flower for? Blah, you just ponder it, and you carry on doing that, and eventually you'll know all that there is to know about this tiny flower because you've really given it some welly. That is what James says you should do with your Bible. You should give it a lot of welly. And particularly those little phrases that suddenly come upon you and you think, oh, where's that come from? I can actually remember the first time I read Leviticus chapter 1 and realized what it was saying. And I thought, he died for me. He was really perfect, and he did all that for me. I, as it were, placed my hands on the offering, and there it was standing in front of me, and my sin was dealt with. It meant so much to me. And the little word that is there so often in the Old Testament, but not so common in the New Testament, that James is shouting about, meditate. Now, meditation has got a bad press, sadly. It's full of mantras and lotus positions and all that sort of thing. Not that. Not that. You're inviting in something you don't want to invite in, potentially. Don't go near it. Anywhere near it. Keep clear of it. But Bible meditation is a different thing. And I'll tell you what we're going to do this morning. I'm going to invite you to take a little trip with me because recently I've been meditating on a particular phrase that leapt out and hit me. And I'm going to ask you at this stage to, if you've got a pulpit Bible available, find Genesis, not difficult, first book in the Bible, and go to chapter 41. Now, if you're using a Bible that you found in the pews, you've probably got the NIV, yeah? Has anybody got anything else other than the NIV?
RSV?
RSV?
New King James.
New King James, good man. Di, you're a scholar. Well done. Anything else? So I missed where that was. The Living, right, okay. Now, somebody with the NIV who's prepared to give it a lot of welly. Oh, no, let me paint the background first, because you know this story. It's the story of Joseph, one of the second youngest of Jacob's sons, and he's sold into slavery by his brothers. He rises and becomes the leader, chief administrator in the house of Potiphar. And suddenly things are a lot better. He's a brilliant administrator, this man Joseph. And then through lies on the part of Potiphar's wife, he ends up in jail again. And as far as we know, he just spends years there. But again, he's an outstanding character, and he's virtually entrusted with the running of the prison. Incredible. But as far as he could see, he's going to spend the rest of his life there. And then do you remember the king, the Pharaoh of Egypt, has this dream. And he sees seven fat cows followed by seven very, very hungry cows. And he thinks, what on earth does this mean? And he summons Joseph because he hears about his reputation. And could somebody read really loudly for me? I've got a microphone. Have you got it, Anne? NIV. Right, I'm going to copy you again. Anne, here we go. Could you read 14 to 16? Is that all right? Here we go.
So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to Joseph, "I had a dream, and no one can interpret it. But I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it." "I cannot do it," Joseph replied to Pharaoh, "but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires."
Thanks, Anne. Right, most of you will have had that. Di, can you read out good and loud, no microphone, I'm afraid, that last verse, 16 again? Listen carefully, folks. Genesis 41. 41 and verse 16. Now, while Di's finding it, let me apologise. About a year ago, I spoke to you and really encouraged you to get to grips with reading the Bible, cover to cover, or in some way, making sure that you've got hold of the big picture. And then when you've got it once, do it again. And when you've done it twice, do it again. I was really trying to encourage. And I said to you that the New King James was the best book, the best version to study it by, but not necessarily to read it. I was finding it a bit clunky. I apologise. It is the best book to study, the best version to study it by, but it's not half as clunky as I led you to believe. So this is, I think, the best version nowadays available. And Di, are you there with 16? Yeah, and if you could read it out really loudly, mate. It was that little phrase, "an answer of peace," that brought me up short. That's not what all the other versions say. They've unfortunately put a twist on it. And could somebody read the RSV? Yeah. Go on, Jackie, hang on.
Hang on, let me see on the page. Right, Joseph answered Pharaoh, "It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favourable answer."
That's so different, a favourable answer as opposed to an answer of peace. A favourable answer implies God will tell Pharaoh what he wants to hear. Pharaoh will be so chuffed because it will be exactly the answer he wants. That's not at all what the original says, and the New King James has got it right. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And that word peace is a word that all Christians should love and cherish, shalom. God will give Pharaoh an answer of shalom. What does that mean to you? What difference does that make? And what might have happened to Pharaoh? Let's just have some answers. Shout out. Sorry. What was that? That little phrase, God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. Those four words, an answer of peace. What would it mean to you? Oh. It would, if he received it correctly, it would set his mind. Bear in mind, what Joseph has just announced would define at least 14 years of Egyptian history. It was that profound. God will give you an answer of shalom, and it will change the way this nation's run for at least 14 years. Anything else? Right. I think that's the important thing, Rob. God would be in control. That's what it would say. That's what shalom is. When you have shalom in your life, God is in control. An answer of peace. Let me give you an unusual... There's not many times in the scriptures when this phrase comes up, but I'll give you another one. It occurred in the laws that God gave his people when they're invading Canaan for the first time. And the law says that you approach a city and effectively you say, will there be peace between us? You make an offer of peace. And if the nation comes back and says, yes, we accept your offer of shalom, that nation gets incorporated into the Jewish nation. It falls under all the laws of the Jewish people and so on. They become slaves, but who wouldn't want that rather than have the Jewish nation move in a war situation? There are terms of peace offered, not terms of war. Anything else from anybody? Right, don't worry. I want you to go away and think of that phrase. I think it's happened to me once. Probably should have happened a lot more. But years ago, I was at a church where afterwards it emerged, I got chatting to a young man, and it emerged that he was in an absolute turning point, a crisis point in life. He could not choose between two very different careers. And I listened to him, and I thought, I know which is the way of shalom for you. And I told him. Now I hope, and I can't remember looking back, but I hope I said to him, do check that out with your elders or whatever, because that's a sensible thing to do. I just can't remember. Years later, I happened to meet him again. And he said, I'd pretty well forgotten about what happened. And he said to me, I'm so glad that you said what you said. And he'd chosen the career that I said would be the wiser choice. He was loving it. He was prospering, and the other choice he was still able to do, if you like, as a pastime, and enjoy that as well. Now, that's the only time that's happened to me, so don't go, you know, I'm nothing special, I've made more mistakes than anybody here. But that was a word of peace into his life. Your homework. I've let Josh, he's not here today, but he may have already let some of you know, the house group leaders, I've given Josh four or five verses which mention the phrase, do not venture to turn to the left or the right. It often comes up, at least four or five times, and probably more. Do not forsake this law, if you like, by going to the left or the right. And I want you to think that phrase through until it resonates in your heart. That's what meditating does. It gets the information from here to here. And as James puts it, you walk away blessed, which means you've got a blessing to give away. That's it. Now, we could spend a whole day on how to meditate, biblical meditation. We can't do that today. But I want you to make a start. Start by just rest of today. Chew over this phrase, an answer of peace. Think of just breathing shalom into a situation. And then in your house groups or alone, when you get the email from Josh, have a think about don't veer to the left or to the right. Last thing, was James a man who could give a word of peace? Yes, he was. Do you remember what happened when the church had worldwide, as it were, European-wide, had reached a certain stage and this big issue came up? What should we do about all these new Gentile converts and the law? Should they be made to follow the laws that God gave us in the Old Testament? And it was a big debate. And Paul and Barnabas came and they spoke to the assembled church and told the church all that had been happening among the Gentiles. And everybody listened. And then the Bible says it fell quiet. And I reckon for a few moments you could have heard a pin drop. This was make or break for the future of the church. It was that big an issue. And James stood up and he said, as it were, I think I've got it. And he spoke a word of peace. It was quite detailed, but you could hear the listeners. If you use your imagination, you can just hear them going, that's it. That's it. It's going to work. And it blew away all the dangers of a sort of split or something horrible. And it became a source of peace. And the whole church rejoiced. Maybe you'll have the privilege that I didn't expect to have, but you'll be able to speak a word of peace into somebody's life. Something really beautiful and profound. And if you're wondering too, if God still performs the sort of operation he performed on James, where he suddenly took away the shutters and showed James who his brother really was, then just rest assured, God's still in the business of doing that. And it'd be lovely if you spoke to somebody this morning, if you'd like to, and they'll help you to see how those shutters can be taken away.